Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is March 4th, 2020, and I'm your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Behind the Mask, but does it need to be an N95? And our guest skeptics? Well, the first guest skeptic is Dr. Christopher Patey. He is an assistant professor with Memorial University Medical School in St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada. Over the past 17 years, he has practiced as a rural emergency and family physician and clinical chief of emergency in Carbonear Hospital. Welcome to the SGEM, Chris.
Thanks, Ken. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, this is great getting to work together again, because back in the day, we used to work together in the prettiest town in Canada, Goderich, Ontario.
Most definitely, Ken. It was, I refer to the good old days, actually. It was starting out practice back there. It was a special time in my life with some great mentors, and I'd love to get back there again sometime.
Oh, you have a standing invitation to return to the square, which is actually an octagon. All right, Paul Norman, you are our second guest skeptic, and you're a registered nurse working as a frontline emergency nurse in Eastern Health, Newfoundland, Canada. You have greater than 10 years of experience working in emergency nursing and critical care. Your focus is on implementing of lean strategy, quality and process improvement. Your work has been extended to reach emergency services throughout Canada and contribute on many platforms, including local, regional, provincial, and national speaking engagements. Talk about setting the bar high there, Paul. Wow.
I think Chris might have wrote this intro for me.
Well, Paul, how did Chris get you roped into being on the SGEM?
Chris and I have been working together for the past number of years, and we certainly love to question everything and work hard on looking at evidence. And also, I've been a fan of the show for a very long time. I'm a bit of a super fan. Listened to every single episode. And I met up with you at CAPE last year. And I guess when Chris was talking to you about doing the show, he immediately thought of me and said, you know, being such a fan of the show, it might be nice to bring me on.
Paul had to join us. That was essential.
That was a deal breaker. Paul had to be on the SGEM.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. Most definitely.
Well, being Canadian and that you have self-identified as to listening to all the episodes, there's only one thing I can say to you. Sorry, eh? All right, so I understand you guys have some disclaimers, though. You want to get out of the way before we start getting into the critical appraisal. So, Chris, what's your disclaimer?
So, I think, Ken, from us, we're both frontline emerge physicians, and we are not expert on PPE. Actually, I still go back and look at that acronym and say, yes, professional protection. Personal protective equipment is what it is. We are not an expert on influenza, H1, coronavirus. Nor are we expert journal reviewers. We love looking at the evidence. We love reviewing the evidence for anything which improves emergency department flow. However, our specialty is the front line.
All right. And Paul, you wanted to have a little bit of a disclaimer in there as well?
Yeah, as Chris said, we're not experts on a bunch of things there, but we are experts on asking questions from the frontline perspective in rural healthcare, and especially in the ED, that's where both of us work. And we want to ensure that that our patients receive quality and pertinent and important and efficient care that's best for them.
Oh, I can sign on to that, because you know what? I think patients deserve the best care based on the best evidence. But I need to make a disclaimer, and my disclaimer is I am an expert on critical appraisal. Yes, uber nerd. But I don't know what mask, if any, is best preventing this COVID-19 virus. But I think the group of us can agree on a few basic or general recommendations. And that would be, you know, get a flu shot if possible. Wash your hands well. And everybody's been talking about 20 seconds with soap and water and singing happy birthday twice. Try not to touch your face. I know that's hard. Avoid people who are sick. And hey, if you're the sick one, stay home, okay? If you're feeling ill, stay home. Don't get everybody else sick. Cough into a tissue and throw it out immediately, or cough into your elbow. Disinfect objects on surfaces with just regular household cleaning wipes or sprays. And people who are feeling well don't need to wear a face mask. And people who are feeling ill should wear a face mask. And of course, reach out to your local health authority if you think you might have COVID-19. This whole story is evolving quickly, and so these recommendations could change. And so people should be encouraged to go to official websites to get the latest update on the situation. And I'll put links in the show notes to things like the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, Health Canada, and the World Health Organization. All right, disclaimers are out of the way. Time to get on with the case, Chris.
Perfect, Ken. So our case today, I think with the potential, I think we're calling it a pandemic eventually, global impact of the coronavirus and our rural emergency department having an extremely low compliance rate for N95 mask fitting. Actually, our department was 0%. Our ED administrator sends an urgent request for everyone to have N95 mask testing ASAP, including shaving.
And Ken, if the viewers won't be able to see us on the radio, I have a beard.
Yeah, so I see you're adhering to the recommendations.
Yeah, so I'm wondering about the evidence supporting this initiative of the mask, and if there are any recent evidence surrounding N95 mask usage.
Well, many hospitals have their healthcare workers fitted for N95 masks in response to the 2009 H1N1 pandemic. The N95 masks were known to prevent small little particles and therefore thought to be more effective. What was not known is whether or not this better effectiveness would translate into less viral respiratory infections acquired in hospitals compared to just regular disposable surgical medical masks. In other words, would an N95 mask have a healthcare provider-oriented outcome, or a PU?
So when it appeared that the transmission of pandemic H1N1 was not different from the seasonal influenza, the recommendation for medical mask in most settings was reinstated.
Yeah, and with the potential for an epidemic outbreak of coronavirus, there is a demand for an increased vigilance in preventing measures to prevent and contain the outbreak of this communicable disease.
And there have been a number of other studies discussing masks in preventing influenza spread.
So the first one we have with Loeb et al. 2009 did a non-inferiority trial of surgical masks versus N95 respiratory masks for preventing flu in Ontario nurses working at tertiary care centers. They concluded surgical masks were non-inferior.
And also McIntyre et al. 2009 did a cluster RCT on the use of face masks to control for respiratory viruses transmission in the household. They found face masks were unlikely to be an effective policy for seasonal respiratory disease. This was in part because less than 50% of participants had mask adherence. Those who wore the mask did have statistically significant reduction in clinical infections.
McIntyre et al. 2011 followed with another study in the same year comparing efficacy of non-face masks to fit-tested and non-fit-tested N95 respiratory masks in preventing respiratory infections in hospital workers in China. The results showed a significant decrease in respiratory infections, including influenza. The authors did caution, however, readers that the trial may have been underpowered.
And the final reference we want to give is by Smith et al. In CMAJ 2016. This was a systematic review and meta-analysis on the topic. The authors concluded, quote, although N95 respirators appear to have a protective advantage over surgical masks in laboratory settings, our meta-analysis showed there were insufficient data to determine definitively whether N95 respirators are superior to surgical masks in protecting healthcare workers against transmissible acute respiratory infections in clinical settings, end of quote. All right, Chris, I think you're going to give the clinical question for today's podcast.
Are N95 masks superior in preventing flu or flu-like illnesses in hospital workers compared to medical masks?
And what's the reference?
And the reference is Radonovich et al., N95 respirators versus medical masks for preventing influenza among healthcare personnel. A randomized control trial published in JAMA 2019. The Respiratory Protection Effectiveness Clinical Trial, also named RESPECT.
You know, all these studies need acronyms, so the RESPECT trial.
So I could have used the RESPECT song, RESPECT, by Aretha Franklin, but we went with a Michael Jackson song, Behind the Mask. All right, let's run through the PICO. What was the population?
Population of full-time hospital employees defined as providing at least 24 hours of direct patient care a week. Participants were instructed to wear their assigned protective devices during a 12-week period, also known as the intervention period, which the incidence of viral respiratory illness was expected to be the highest that year as developed by an alert algorithm. This was for a 48-week intervention spanning four consecutive viral respiratory seasons.
All right, and what was the intervention?
The N95 respiratory mask. Employees were told to wear their mask when 6 feet or 2 meters from a person suspected or confirmed of having a respiratory illness.
And what did they compare it to?
The control was a medical mask.
All right, let's run through the outcomes. What was the primary outcome for this study?
The incidence of laboratory confirmed influenza.
And their secondary outcomes?
They had four. They include the incidence of acute respiratory illness, laboratory detected respiratory infections, laboratory confirmed respiratory illness, and influenza-like illness. And the adherence to these interventions were assessed.
All right, the author's conclusions were, quote, among outpatient healthcare personnel, N95 respirators versus medical masks as worn by participants in this trial resulted in no significant difference in the incidence of laboratory-confirmed influenza, end of quote. All right, you know that we've got a quality checklist for RCTs. There are 11 questions. Let's run through those quickly. First question is, the study population, did it focus on those in the emergency department?
No.
Were the patients adequately randomized?
Yes, they actually used cluster randomization, and remembering that cluster randomization can decrease the power and precision of a study.
The third question, the randomization process, was it concealed?
Yes.
Did they do an intention to treat analysis?
Yes.
The study patients were recruited consecutively?
Yes, but it was not explicitly stated in the manuscript.
The patients in both groups, were they similar with respect to prognostic factors?
Yes.
Was everybody blinded to group allocation?
No.
All right, were all groups treated equally except for the intervention?
Yes.
Was the follow-up complete?
Yes.
Were all patient important outcomes, and in this case, it would be healthcare provider important outcomes, were they considered?
A little bit unsure. These were hospital employee outcomes. And I guess, is the mask just for their protection or is it also prevent them from being a vector of disease to the patients?
And the final question, the treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
No, unfortunately not.
All right, let's run through those key results. This study was conducted in 7 medical centers and 137 outpatient sites over 4 years. They did this over the 3-month flu season between 2011 and 2015. They enrolled just over 2,800 full-time employees with a mean age of 43 years and 84% were female. And this was not surprising because hospital staff is usually about 80% female. Nurses made up 41% of the cohort with less than 10% being physicians. Okay, what was the big key result?
I guess the key result was that there was no statistical difference in laboratory confirmed influenza between the N95 mask and a medical mask.
Yeah, so that primary outcome, what they were looking for was laboratory confirmed influenza. So what was the percentage in the N95 group?
The percentage of the N95 was 8.2%.
And how did that compare to the medical mask group?
The medical mask slightly lower at 7.2%.
Ooh, I can do that math in my head. That's a 1% absolute difference. And when they looked at the 95% confidence interval, it went below 0% and above 0%. So that's where we get it was not statistically significant. They also did an adjusted odds ratio, and that too was not statistically significant. It spanned 1 or no difference. How about the secondary outcomes?
So for our secondary outcomes, of which there were 4, there was no statistical difference in any of the secondary outcomes using an intention to treat or per protocol analysis.
And we'll throw in a table into the show notes that shows those 4 secondary outcomes, such as acute respiratory illness, a lab-detected respiratory disease, a lab-confirmed respiratory illness, or an influenza-like illness. One final point for the results section is that self-reporting wearing the mask as always or sometimes was about 90% in both groups. All right, you know I want to get to the talk nerdy section, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I love talking nerdy. But you wanted to make some initial comments before we discuss the limitations.
Most definitely, Ken. For us, being quality improvement people in the frontline eMERGE, we're extreme fans of pragmatic effectiveness trials. We really like where you evaluate effectiveness in real-life practice conditions. We think that's absolutely lovely. We do like the fact that this was wide U.S. circulation and with also including climate and geography. There was also varied peds and adult, and we had an emergency department included. The enrollment spanned over four seasons of peak viral respiratory infections, and they took samples from asymptomatic and symptomatic patients. We also liked that it was a cluster randomized to avoid mixing of interventions in each setting. We do believe it was sufficiently powered to detect difference.
All right, let's run through not four, not six, but five nerdy points. And the first one is going to be me, and that is about self-reporting. Healthcare workers self-reported any illness, and this could have resulted in either under or over-reporting being sick. Adherence to mask use was also self-reported, and of those reporting, 90% said they wore the mask always or sometimes. However, when you dig into the details, almost a third in each group did not even report adherence. So this further limits the interpretation of the results.
So number two, lack of physicians. Being a self-reporting physician who's done many surveys and studies, I think that we often underreport some of our things as well, may not follow all the guidelines. And this study only showed 10% of the cohort were physicians. I suspect physicians were less likely to follow mask recommendations. And unfortunately, the supplemental material did not break down what these physicians were. Were they physician trainees? Were they advanced practitioners? And I really think narrowing that down in terms of the type of physicians that were in the study would have been nice.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have that granularity in the data. So we really can't apply this to physicians because we just don't know. The vast majority of people in this study were not physicians. And in that 10% cohort, it wasn't 10% physicians. It was 10% who were either physicians, physician trainees, or advanced practitioners. And I share your experience that physicians aren't usually as good at following recommendations. It can seem like we're trying to herd cats sometimes as an administrator.
Yeah, and number three, Ken, was outside of work. Participants were not required to use the mask outside of their work setting. Employees had to have at least 24 hours per week of direct patient care to be included in the study. However, more time would have been spent outside the hospital or clinic setting. These outside influences and potential exposures could have an impact on the results. And if it's like myself or Chris who have three kids, those kids are also bringing home vectors of disease as well.
Many vectors, many diseases. So number four, patient-oriented outcome. This study focused on the employees. While there was no significant difference in the healthcare worker getting ill, it would have been great to know if they had any impact on the patient's well-being as well.
Yeah, we talked about this being a provider-oriented outcome, but that's a little play on the POO term because the POO usually refers to a patient-oriented outcome. And yes, we need healthy workers to provide great care, but we would have liked to have seen some data included in did the type of mask or a mask at all have an impact on whether or not the patients got ill? So was there a patient-oriented outcome? The fifth and final thing is about cost. N95 respiratory masks are more expensive than medical masks. The first step is we need to determine if the intervention works. Now, this study does not support a benefit for hospital employees. If it did show a benefit to them, or more specifically, to the patient, then we could decide if the cost was worth any efficacy. Without good evidence of benefit, we should consider putting resources towards other things that do have evidence of working, like vaccination programs and hand washing initiatives. Well, those are the five nerdy points. It's time to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
Yeah, so Ken, we generally agree with the author's conclusions. You, Paul?
I think it's still unclear whether N95s are better than a surgical mask for preventing respiratory illnesses.
But the burden of proof is on those making the claim that they are, and this was a superiority trial, and so because they failed to demonstrate superiority for the N95, then we have to accept the null hypothesis. All right, can you give us a bottom line?
Sure thing, Ken. There appears to be no advantage to the N95 respirator mask over surgical mask or medical mask for hospital employees in preventing flu or flu-like illnesses.
And how about a case resolution, Chris?
Sure. So, Ken, I returned to my Parley emails, and I talked to my nursing administrator, and I said to continue N95 mask testing. However, it's most important to stress to all staff to get their flu shot, consistently wash their hands, stop touching their face, and wear a mask if patients suspected or any confirmed respiratory illness.
All right, how are you going to take this information and apply it clinically?
Well, for this study, we'll increase my use of medical masks with all suspected patients arriving to my ED or other outpatient setting. We should focus on things that have been demonstrated to benefit, like vaccinations or hand washing.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point to make. Put on a mask, we just don't know whether it's going to be a regular medical mask or an N95 mask. We don't have a demonstration of superiority, but, you know, put a mask on. But then we can't forget the basics, like washing our hands well, trying not to touch our face, and of course, getting vaccinated. Chris, you're an administrator too. You've got your administrator hat on at your hospital. What are you going to tell your staff?
I think we just need to reinforce. We got to sit there. When we're in the trenches, we got to make sure that people are washing their hands effectively when they go in or come out of the patient's room, not to touch their face. Obviously, if they're sick or unwell, not to come into the emergency department if they can help it. And if they are around patients with suspected or confirmed respiratory illness, to wear a mask. I think we got to increase our vigilance, especially as physicians, to wear a mask at all points. And of course, as Beth Doc would say, get a flu shot.
All right, well, it's time for the Keener contest. And last week's winner was Rodney Hodge. He's from Bayswater North in Australia. He knew that the original Crayola box that was released in 1903 contained 8 original colors. This was red, orange, yellow, green, blue, violet, brown, and black. And it sold for only a nickel. An interesting thing about this Keener contest winner, he is not in healthcare. I thought that was really interesting. He said he's been listening for 3 months and enjoys the SGEM, and he has a sister that he's trying to encourage to listen to the SGEM because she's a nurse. Well done, Rodney. I will send you a cool skeptical prize. What's the question this week, Chris?
Sure. I guess in the sentence of list to hear again, can you please give me 5 possible reasons as to why Michael Jackson wore a mask in public.
And if you can give me 5 reasons why Michael Jackson wore a face mask in public, send it to me at thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Well, thank you very much, Chris, for suggesting this paper, because you're the one who reached out to me and said, hey, Ken, what do you think? And I said, I don't know what I think. I'll read it, and you need to come on the show.
I thank you, Ken, for encouraging me to join on the show. I am as well a great fan. I think you're doing a wonderful service to healthcare across the world.
And Paul, superfan Norman, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, man, it's been a real pleasure, Ken. I couldn't wait for this to do this. I've been listening to your show for a long time, right from episode number 1.
Well, I might have to give you something a little extra special. Beyond just a cool skeptical prize, watch your mail, it's coming. But until then, somebody needs to give the tagline.
Yeah, I'll go for sure. I want everyone to remember to be skeptical of everything you learn, even if you heard it right here on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.